This is CliffCentral.com.
Here he is. He is the best-selling author of We Have Now Begun Our Descent. He is the host of the Justice Factor on ENCA, but most importantly, he's here every week for us to give us the burning platform. Justice Malala is on every Thursday on CliffCentral.com, and it's brought to you by Nando's.
Burning platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
Sure. It's been another busy week. It doesn't seem like we'll ever have a week. And last week, you spent quite a lot of time here with us. Ended up writing a very interesting article on Monday as a result of our discussion. But every week, we have too much to talk about and not enough time.
There's just so much to talk about. I mean, just where else do I walk in with a list of like, oh, let's talk about this. And you guys say, did you see what Dalimpofu said on Twitter? And there you go. That's a whole other... If you think about what he tweeted, let me
read it to you, actually, because it's quite cool. I mean, just from the point of view that there's going to be a lot more of this as we go closer to the elections, of the blurring of lines between what is a state event or a national event and something that is an ANC event. So Dalimpofu this morning said, because you remember Natim Tetwa said something about Mickey Mouse parties, right? And referring obviously to the EFF. So Natim Tetwa said, Mickey Mouse parties must know only the ANC can rule this country. He quotes him and then says, at a government rally paid for by all taxpayers. Hashtag Banana Republic. That's from Dali.
So there you go. I mean, that's a whole topic on its own. And actually, it's quite interesting because if you think about the rally in Port Elizabeth, in the 16th of April it was, when the ANC launched its manifesto, people were bussed from all over the country.
And we only know that because there was that tragedy where 11 people on their way back to Ikurhuleni, of all places.
People from the Western Cape, all kinds of people were bussed to that. And the stadium couldn't be filled.
No.
46,000 were expected inside the stadium, the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium, but only 42,000, according to Baleka Mbete, were actually pitched up. A lot of people say maybe it's just more like 30,000. So this rally yesterday, this Freedom Day rally, which Dalimpofu is absolutely right to say, you, Mabale Moloi, paid for with your handsome taxes.
Now, let's just remind everybody what that means. Food parcels, T-shirts.
Transport.
Transport is laid on. But basically, Giani is not a rich part of South Africa. This is in Limpopo province, which is probably the poorest province.
This is the former homelands. Remember that the former homelands, actually in poverty terms, are absolutely the worst. There was no industry. There wasn't much except if you were in the Bantustan government itself. So, you know, it's an area where the ANC used to get 98%, maybe 99% of the vote in 1994, 99.
So it was safe. They knew they'd fill the stadium.
But, you know, things are changing slowly. And support is in the 80s now, some places in the 70s. Julius Malema has been going over there for a while and drumming up support. So, you're going to see more and more of these events. You're going to see more and more of our leaders saying all kinds of things. What was interesting for me was the fact that a lot of the utterances at that rally yesterday were all about the Constitution. It was, the Constitution is safe in this government's hands. Natim Tetwa himself saying that, you know, this is a government that respects the Constitution, a government that says that we will go to the polls and renew our mandate and so forth and so forth. Well, think about the Constitution. The Constitutional Court said President Zuma must reprimand those ministers who were involved in Nkandla, did not do anything about the Nkandla matter over years. And what happens? Did you see the letters? I don't know if you guys saw the letters. The letters basically say, the Constitutional Court has ruled that, you know, the public protector was right. And one of the things that the Constitutional Court said I must do is that I must reprimand you. So consider yourself reprimanded.
that's basically it. There we go. All right. Back to work. Everybody, nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Everybody just get on with it already.
So what is that exactly? Like, consider yourself reprimanded. So, you know, for me, it's, are you saying that really, what is this exactly? What's going on? But I think this year's Freedom Day celebrations were bittersweet, maybe. Were bittersweet because we talk about 22 years of democracy, but I think we've entered a phase of this democracy where where we are asking ourselves about what is the content of this thing? What does it mean that we've been voting, we've had this open spaces for 22 years? I think I found myself interested in the way people said to me, Happy Freedom Day yesterday. And it was Happy Freedom Day as in, ha, 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 Happy Freedom Day. It's a joke. Or Happy Freedom Day, as in go out there and actually
claim your freedom.
Claim your freedom. Put your stake in the sand and say, this is what I stand for, and actually believe in this. And then, you know, there's Happy Freedom Day, as in what's changed? Have we really changed? And so forth.
You know, I sometimes sit and I wonder how to look at this objectively. Like if an alien landed here and they looked at South Africa in 2016 and they looked at South Africa back in 2004. I mean, in 94. Mm. I think we've got to be balanced about this. There's a huge amount that has happened. And it's
that
natural.
Is extraordinary stuff that has happened.
And it's natural. It's human nature to go, well, you know, the people of Giani might not have running water in every house. They might not have electricity that's reliable. They might not have a shopping mall in that area or police station that works properly. But for the people of Giani, and maybe they're a bad example, but across the country, there are countless examples of places where people now have very basic amenities, where their houses have been built, where people are able to, for the first time, because, you know, we look at the practical stuff, we look at the things that cost money, but people are able to voice their opinions like never before. Mm. People are able to participate in the economy like never before.
I think that's absolutely true. We mustn't underplay what has been achieved, and that's part of the. I've had a lot of discomfort with, say, the Fallist movement and its narrative of South Africa, even the EFF and its narrative of South Africa that absolutely nothing has been achieved. I think a lot has been achieved. I think it is human nature to say, oh, but, you know, how far have we really gone? And I think that's a useful instinct to have, because it's very easy for those in power to say, think about the electricity connections that we've had. And we've had many, 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 many new electricity connections, hence the problems with Eskom we've had and so forth and so forth. That shouldn't stop us from saying, actually, Eskom could have done better. Actually, Thabo Mbeki apologized to the nation in 2008, December, about electricity connection, because he acknowledged that as government, we were told in the 90s that, guys, we're doing such a good job, let's build new power stations to make sure we don't run out of power. So I think it's a useful instinct. What I think politically we are going through is that you have a Freedom Day in which a few people in Cape Town, Joburg, are marching saying Zuma must fall, and so forth and so forth. And I think the President Zuma administration has put a real spotlight on what this constitution allows and doesn't allow, what it means and what it doesn't mean for all of us. So in a way, I think it's a Freedom Day of questioning really whether the leaders we have are as committed to the document itself, to the spirit of the document itself that we adopted in the 1990s. I think it's a pivotal Freedom Day. I think it's more poignant, if you will, than the 21 we've had since 1994. I think there's something going on in this country now that is new, that is playing around with spaces that we haven't played around in, and I'm quite interested to see how we go upwards from here. I have no doubt that we will, but I think that it's a. I think if you're in power, for example, you can't take it for granted anymore. No. That
well, Batabile Dlamini learned that when she burst into tears and was challenged for
exactly,
the first time.
Exactly. You'd never have thought a leader of the ANC and the ANC Women's League would get that sort of reception. When she goes places, whether she wants to align herself with the movement that draws and so forth and so forth, all these things cannot be taken for granted.
It used to be that when a powerful ANC
leader
came into your community, people celebrated and cheered and everybody came to listen. Now people are openly hostile.
People are not just hostile, but also just saying, you know what? You're a servant of the people. Mm. You're not just any old.
This might be at a ripe old age of 22, this might be the people of this country's opportunity to reclaim that power themselves.
I think they are, and I think that the formal structures of democracy, like voting, are maturing, will become strained as well. I think August 3, you'll see people voting, you'll see people questioning the vote. Mm. But I think it will add a brick to that wall of that we're building. I don't think it will be comfortable anymore. I think a lot of us are going through areas where we're not as comfortable as we used to be in the spaces that we are. But I think it's necessary. I think we have to go through it. But I think certainties are over. I think people who stand up in front of us like yesterday and say, oh, you know, I respect the Constitution and I will do this, I will do that, they will be held to account because, you know, the sand is shifting, the ground is shifted. People are asking tough questions about what is this thing? What's going on here? And they just don't believe everything that goes on. And I think you'll see it in the numbers when August 3rd comes in.
Now, the government says, again, Zizi Kodwa said they were laying charges of treason against Julius Malema for saying, you know, they'll take the country back through the barrel of a gun if necessary. Mm. And this is the kind of hot talk that we hear from politicians. We've heard it before. Why is he being singled out here? Is it an obvious answer, or is there more going on?
Well, I mean,
treason, really? I hear people like David Matlobo, who really it seems to me to be one of the most incapable of our ministers, saying, "No, this is very serious. This is a treason thing. We've got to hand it over to the hawks. It must be investigated thoroughly. He could destabilize the whole country. It's hate speech. He must be limited."
What is there to investigate? He was on Al Jazeera, man. It's quite something. I think there are two things here. The one is that I've said since 2009 that, you know, we're becoming a sick securocratic state, a state where the intelligence agencies, the army, the police are becoming more and more, essentially, I'm watching you. They're becoming Big Brother. And the people who lead them, like David Matlobo, are people who are picked especially to essentially take orders from the union buildings. I don't think David Matlobo, who comes from a local municipality in Mpumalanga, knew a thing about intelligence matters, but he's now the intelligence minister. The person who knows about intelligence minister is Jacob Zuma, who used to be the head of intelligence at the ANC.
Right.
So my view is really that what we're going through now is a paranoia where people like David Matlobo see an NGO marching and they say, oops, they're trying to overthrow the government. And if someone in the ANC says, maybe it's time for President Zuma to do the right thing, it must be the Americans telling them to do that. NGOs, those NGOs must be funded by reactionary American da-da-da-da-da-da. And so you have this climate that of just pointing fingers. So he says some NGOs we can't work out who their funders are, what they do. Tell us who exactly that NGO is.
And don't please forget that we still don't know who funds the ANC or the DA or the EFF, because you won't even tell us who those funders
are. Good point.
And aren't those the most dangerous possible funders of all?
Exactly, because, you know, as we know, they could fund you until you give them the right to appoint the Minister of Finance and the Minister of...
I mean, can you imagine questioning the funders of the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation or the Helen Suzman Foundation or the Nelson Mandela Foundation, but you're not looking at yourself as a political party?
And saying what's going on.
How much is the Nelson Mandela Foundation going to do to destabilize anything? I'm just using them as an example.
Exactly. So we need to know who exactly does he mean. And so you have that element of it. But then Julius Malema comes along and says, what is really nonsensical? He you know, people don't get it, that having a war in your country is not a joke. It means that we'll be sitting here scared for our lives if we are even allowed to broadcast, that there'll be child soldiers running around with AK-47s. It's madness. You don't want to joke around about going to war. That said, Julius Malema did say, if the ANC continues to send in the army when ordinary people protest, if it sends in, basically becomes... as the apartheid government used to be, then we'll have no option but to defend ourselves. He shouldn't have said it. But actually, what is so treasonous about saying I will defend myself?
Nothing. And it's no less than what Colin Maine said a while ago,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. In fact, what Colin Maine said was way worse, talking about, oh, we will have a civil war, and for what? Oh, to protect Jacob Zuma. I mean, really. So there isn't even a principle involved.
By the way, Colin Maine started following me on Twitter and Instagram the other day.
But the real one.
Yeah, should I be worried?
No. Be happy. Although it says something about you.
It says something about me. Not good things. All right. Can we talk about Fikile Mbalula? I know this is something that Ben has been agonizing about.
Yeah.
There are people on both sides of the argument, whether or not he's making some valid points, whether or not he's ruining sport in this country. But central to all of this must also be a discussion around how much the Ministry of Sport has done that is positive, and whether anything can be attributed to that ministry at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think Ben is amply placed to tell us whether actually things are getting better, things are changing, things are actually going in the positive direction. For me, I've been following the Twitter conversation, the conversation in the comment sections of those websites that still allow people.
Those are dangerous.
Those are
sections
deadly
to go into. Comment sections.
I just never go there. But I've been very interested in that. In what's going on in this society. Are we, you know, that the way the conversation degenerated within minutes of him saying, you know what? I appointed an eminent persons group. This group has gone into chapter and verse, numbers, everything. Here they are. It's not me saying this. He also said, and I think it's important to say, these federations, particularly those top five federations, we sat down, we said, these are the things that we have to do. Can we reach them by this point? Was it a perfect process? Probably not. What does it mean for all of us? Is it really great? So he took the decision on the basis of the advice from this EPG. And then the conversation essentially became this idiot, Fikile Mbalula. Now, you know, is he an idiot? Is he not an idiot? It's up to people for themselves to... But it degenerated into...
Becomes ad hominem immediately.
Immediately. It wasn't about, what does it feel for me to sit and watch a South African team play? And I'm not a big sporting guy, but I'm, you know, I'll watch rugby because it's the Rugby World Cup. Mm. I'll I'll watch athletics, because you know what, we're playing in the in some big international tournament, and I for a week I become, oh, you know, I'm a golfing expert, because you know, I it's like it's South Africa, you know, it's national pride. I become I know who's playing in the box, because for a week it's
I'm like you,
you know, but I'm
it's
not
suddenly enthusiastic and then nothing for a long time.
Exactly.
But what you're saying here is then, if I understand, and you interviewed him last week.
Yeah, I did. But for me, what I'm saying is, if it's a conversation about this country and how we look, I get worried sometimes that actually the gulf between your Figile Mbalulas and your garden gnome troll on News 24 or something. You know, it's like it's so vast. The sheer you fool, you idiot, you this, you that, and the finger pointing, it just left me feeling like, wow, what are we doing? It's supposed to be 22 years with something. I mean, you know, Figile Mbalula can't tell me, after spending all that money on the, say, the South African Sports Award, that it's good enough to have only two rugby fields in Soweto. That there doesn't seem to be any kind of encouragement of rugby at school level in Soweto or elsewhere. What happened to all those schools that used to play rugby and produce rugby players in the Eastern Cape? We could do so much more. But does that mean that the Gulf, so it's degenerated into you, government didn't do this, and oh, you know, there you are with pretty people at the sports awards, and you are an idiot, and oh, you are racist because you don't want to transform.
But hasn't Fikile brought this upon himself by being the minister of razzmatazz and going on Twitter and being ad hominem himself about just about anyone?
He blocks
someone here. He blocks someone. Is he still following you?
Yeah, he follows me.
I don't know how that happened, because he just blocked me long ago. You, Justice, has he blocked you?
I've been unblocked.
Oh, nice.
You made it back into the fold.
This is a very childish and messy affair, and it blurs, unfortunately, the real issues.
Yeah. No, it does blur the real issues. But for me, I think, you know, Fikile Mbalula is not, he's a very hard guy to love. He does all kinds of things that you think, wow, minister, you know. but he also, this issue for me is one where I think there's a national conversation. Let's not have yet another national conversation. But I think we could handle it a bit more empathetically.
But are we capable of that, though? No, I ask this in all seriousness. Yeah. I don't know if it's because South Africans are tired of having conversations about the same issue. The same issue? Are we like, I'm done. And therefore, because I'm done, I'm going to call you X, Y, and Z instead, because I actually don't have the energy to engage in a meaningful discussion with you.
I think that's
that what's happening?
Maybe we have reached that, but I don't know if people like us in this room, we do, you know, we say all kinds of things, but we also have a responsibility to say what Ben talks about on air. What Ben does with his love for sport, surely there is something about, you know, what Gareth and I say about, oh, you know, I've become South Africa's best, biggest, most amazing analyst of rugby because the Rugby World Cup is on. It says something about me and Gareth, who know nothing about rugby or sport or whatever, wanting to be and feeling South African. So that conversation it's a difficult one, but it's one that we mustn't give up on.
But not even about your opinion, my opinion, or even Fikile Mbalula's opinion. The young person in school who's got a natural talent for running or for jumping or for throwing a ball or for kicking a ball, that person needs to be nurtured and looked after. That person needs to be given a path to success if that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
And if Fikile is not doing that, and if we as a nation are not supporting him to do that, then we're both going to lose.
We're both going to lose. And I think that what surprised me about the nature of this debate was that it's your job. You've been in this job for 22 years. What the heck are you doing? This are the fingers pointing at Fikile Mbalula. Fikile Mbalula is saying, it's been 22 years. You guys are doing nothing. Jacques Kallis, whoever you are, da da da, go jump in the lake. And da, da, da. And it's guys, we actually, that kid you're talking about, we've done nothing for that kid
since Monday. That kid's standing in the middle of all this finger pointing, saying, going, what the hell?
You know, all I want are some, boots to play my sport or something.
That's exactly what it is. It's like, it's so easy to look at transformation on the end of the scale and go, there's nothing here. This is a failure. You guys. But nothing's on the other side where it's actually going to work. Like, you can't say that. I mean, transformation, I think, is the best thing for this country. Can you imagine if we had every opportunity for every kid, how strong our sport would be? Yeah, that is the coolest thing, right? Yeah. But that's where the focus has got to be. It can't be the other way around. And yeah. I think with him, it's easier. And this is unfortunately, this is why politics shouldn't be in sport, because politicians see things as politicians. They don't see things as sports people.
Well, Ben has got a whole podcast special on Monday.
I need 3 hours, but that's just
one. I need to listen to your podcast, because one of the things I think that conversation needs to be about that. What if kids were playing rugby? I'll tell you, the people of the Eastern Cape are weird. What kind of who are these people? They've played rugby. You know, for a guy like me, rugby was like, but that's. I grew up.
Yeah, black people in the Eastern Cape love rugby.
They have exactly. I found them so weird growing up. Like, what's wrong with these people? You know, but they played rugby. Now, what you want is to have them just playing more of that rugby, because then you won't have an issue about selection.
No, you'll have people to choose from.
It'll fix itself.
It'll fix itself, right. But that's what we need. Anyway.
Gentlemen, we haven't got a lot of time, and there's still something else I want to ask Justice, but don't miss Ben's podcast on Monday about transformation in sport. They're going to look at it in a very sober way. He's got some interesting guests. It'll be what you need to know. All right? And we'll pass that around. Justice, just yes. One last thing. The Youth League, the ANC Youth League, what's left of it? They've been saying a lot of things. They say we should follow Robert Mugabe's example. And Jabula Nzuza says, it's an interesting name, says that Bladen Zimande is a rubbish minister. why the ANC Youth League are suddenly talking about things, I do not know. We mentioned Colin Maine just a moment ago. Yeah. Tell me what you think of this.
I just thought we should just have a laugh, really. I mean, how can you sit in South Africa today and have however many, I mean, you know, perhaps the Guptas could help us with that, with their visa business, and tell us how many Zimbabweans are actually in South Africa. But today you still, so one, it's the EFF which has been saying, oh, Robert Mugabe, my man, you're the hero and all that. Now comes along the ANC Youth League saying, oh, we like what he's doing too, and we're going to claim him as our own and all that. What are these people thinking when no Zimbabwean wants to be in Zimbabwe today, okay? They're all coming to South Africa or to Botswana to do the jobs that we haven't educated people enough for. But anyway, so I don't get it that you can have a disaster on your doorstep and still say, oh, I want to be there. What is going on with this organization?
I don't get that. I mean, that's very strange.
It's just strange. So, I mean, the ANC Youth League has been piping up a lot, talking a lot, but not effective at all. They're saying Bladen Zimande is rubbish. Well, why are they saying all this suddenly? And it's because the ANC is divided, and they are on the Jacob Zuma side, and Bladen Zimande and the communists and others are coming out clearly on the other side.
But this is so an interesting move for Blade, because Blade was always very much Zuma's man.
Blade was the front and center of the Zuma administration in the run-up to 2009, 2007. Remember?
So Blade is now in survival mode, is he?
He's very much in survival mode. Every time someone says cabinet reshuffle, the first name on the list is Bladen Zimande is going to go. And so It's very interesting for me that Blade Nzimande is in their sights. But it's the ANC Youth League. I just love them. They just keep on giving me stuff to write about, to talk about. It's a great tradition going back to Fikile Mbalula as president of the ANC Youth League in 2006, 2007.
That was where they began their descent. Don't you think?
Right. Thank you for the material, guys. That's all
I
have,
just to close off today, please ask Mr. Malala, this is from Motz, who says, if the policeman who shot and killed the three-year-old Atlehang Patlani, whom he mentioned in his book, We've Now Begun Our Descent, ever got prosecuted? I can't find anything online.
I don't think so. He wasn't prosecuted. He gave the reason. This is a kid who was playing in a car, and the policeman said he thought he was a hijacker, I think he said it was.
Three-year-old.
Three-year-old, and shot and killed him. No, nothing's happened to him, sadly.
Little Honolo says, would it be interesting for students to form their own political party? Our population is getting younger and smarter, and some of us don't feel represented by the current parties. I personally think this would change the dimensions of the political landscape. It's only a matter of time before students recognize how much power they really have. It has been evident since 76. And it's ironic that our president is, I think he's 76 this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's 76 years old. So the gulf between the way a 70-something-year-old thinks and a 20-something-year-old thinks is huge.
Yeah. You know, over the two registration weekends we've had for the voter registration weekends, 80% of the people who checked their registration or registered were under 30. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this, talking about Advocate Dalim Mpofu. I find it interesting that I think he's probably the oldest leader in the EFF.
Yeah, I think he is.
And if you think up, if you ask about who is actually talking to young people, I think the EFF, with this election that's coming up, is going to surprise us with the youthfulness of its voter base. So all over the world, if you think about, all my women friends are totally in love with the, what's his name, Trudeau, the new prime
Justin
minister?
Justin Trudeau.
Justin Trudeau of Canada. And it's because...
Well, you know, he's nice,
you see?
He's nice to look at. That's why they're in love with him.
He's
at.
He's also young.
We don't have any good-looking politicians. I mean, David Matlovo. God bless him.
No, well, we do have the people's... They call them the people's bay. That would be Mbuyise Ndlozi. Yeah, the ladies love Mbuyise.
Right. Yeah. We're going to send you Colin Maine. Anyway.
With his spare tire. He's going to wear less tight-fitting T-shirts. That's what he's going to do.
Anyway, there has been a global move towards younger and younger leaders. It's interesting for me that only in Zimbabwe do we have people like Robert Mugabe at 92. Here again, going for people who are in their 60s or 70s. It's a sort of almost a loss of touch with global politics. But you think about David Cameron in the UK. You think about Barack Obama, who was 44.
He's a young man.
He's leaving now, and he looks half, a quarter of some of the leaders who are still, you know, talking about. So globally, youthfulness is becoming a bigger and bigger political draw card. So the idea of a student movement, the thing about being a student is that it's also transitory. It's 3, 4, maybe 5 years, some for very few people longer. But you're in that space for a very short period, and then you move on to another stage in your life. I'm not sure that the political movements can become political parties. Remember, the Progressive Youth Alliance is very ANC aligned. DASO is DA aligned. You know, the Fees Must Fall movement is pretty much has become not Fees Must Fall, maybe Roads Must Fall, are very much in the mold of the EFF. So I'm not convinced. If you look at what happened to Fees Must Fall at Wits, it's totally collapsed because it didn't have ideological coherence. There was ANC people, there was Bikoist, there were all kinds of people in that movement. So it's not going to happen, I think.
I read a fact, and I wanted to clarify if it was true, that Robert Mugabe is one of the most educated leaders in the world, having 7 degrees, and 2 of them are master's degrees. Is that true?
It's all true.
He used to also say that he's got 23. I'm not sure about the 7.
He's certainly very well educated.
He's very well educated. We educated him here at the University of Fort Hare. So thank you, South Africa, for that. He also got quite a few. I think those MAs might be from our university, the University of South Africa, which he did by distance learning. You know, don't underestimate the guy. He definitely likes a book and he hits it. Unlike some people I know.
No, he's a smart man, not to be underestimated in terms of his intelligence. Certainly.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's just his unfortunate inability to lose grip of on power that we wish he would relinquish a little more favorably.
That power thing trips up many a man, I tell you.
Well, Justice, that's all we got time for now, but thank you so much for coming in this morning. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's every Thursday morning right here on cliffcentral.com. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure, guys.
This is cliffcentral.com.